Back in on Canuck Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We're here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canuck Central is for Ensign, Pacific Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. We jump into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one is, Lotso is a frequent texter, and I appreciate Lotso's engagement with the show. This question, are you guys inclined to take a stab at why Pettersson is uncriticized by coaching management or teammates? Pettersson has been criticized publicly by Rick Tocchet in the past. And this whole notion, I feel like we get a text, and it's not from you specifically here, Lotso, in the text that I just read, but there seems to be this idea that we never criticize Pettersson. I feel like we've done that for the last 2+ months, saying that the team needs more out of him. But no, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's a bad hockey player. The guy had 100 points last year. He still had over a point a game this season, over 30 goals. It's just that I expect more out of him. I expect better than what we've seen since he signed the new contract, to be quite honest about it. And I expect more in this playoff series. Because he's going through a slump doesn't make him a bad hockey player all of a sudden.
Well, it seems like people want a final judgment.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, you have to, unless you say he's washed, he's done, he's overrated, they have to trade him, he's not worth it, then you're not being critical enough. It's like, hey, why are you letting this guy skate? And it's like, well, we don't have to go down that road. Like, even with stuff that we had with JT, for instance, right, with the criticisms, it was, we criticized his play a couple of years ago or last year even, but we never said, you know, he's a horrible guy, get rid of him, he's a cancer in the room and all these sort of things. And like, no, and that's what people wanted us to say. They're like, why are you guys protecting JT? It's like, well, we're criticizing him. Well, why, they shouldn't have signed him. It's like, well, no, I still think they should have signed him. Like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, just because I don't agree with the extreme that you're at doesn't mean we're not criticizing the player. And that's the thing I think sometimes people get mixed up, is unless you're ridiculing a guy or making a final judgment, yeah, or have this like real spicy take about how bad he's been and then throw in a few superlatives to make it, you know, a little more edgy, then you're not, you know, being critical enough. It's like, no, he needs to be better. At the end of the day, I mean, no Canuck fan can say he doesn't need to be better. Yes. He needs to be better. The question is, how far do you want to take your take?
Yeah.
Are you done with the player, or do you still believe in the player? And I think those are two separate things.
It is Canuck Central and playoff coverage here on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by, and Canuck Central, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their 6 locations across BC this spring. Visit DLEAMC.com. All right, let's bring in our next guest, Preds analyst, former NHL defenseman. It is Hal Gill joining us to tee up Game 5 and take a look back at Game 4. Thanks for this, Hal. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I want to thank Vancouver for all the beautiful weather you've given us during this series. I know you don't get this all the time, but I sure do feel like you did it for me. Yeah. The sun's been out every time we've been here.
Not going to lie, it was like typical Vancouver rain the entire time the Canucks were on the road. So,
I know, and you turned it off for me. You turned off the faucet. I appreciate it.
And it's going to be perfect the next couple of days. So, yeah, it's been a really interesting series. Vancouver, even though it felt like Nashville was the better team in games 3 and 4, Vancouver comes away with a couple of victories. How do you see the way that this has played out to this point?
Yeah, it's kind of a shame that I feel like the series should just be 2-2,
yeah,
just for the sake of the way the games have gone, because I feel like it's a pretty good matchup. The games have been fun, like, and we've kind of had a mixed bag of great defense and awesome offense, and I feel like you kind of had the flow in game 4. I thought was a lot of fun. Like, there was a lot of back and forth, and I don't think typical for either team. And so, yeah, it's funny because I feel like the Preds deserve better. But in the end, when it comes down to winning games, you got to make big plays at the right time. And Vancouver's done that more. So it's kind of been a good battle. And I'm hoping that the Preds can come and keep this thing alive with a big win. I know that's it's going to be a battle to close these guys out because they're going to give you everything they got, but we'll see how it goes. It's been fun so far.
Oh, it has been fun. And, I mean, the game last night, it was against all odds how the Canucks came back. It didn't feel like they had much of a push at all in the third up until the fact they pulled the goalie and Besser made it 3-2, and then obviously the rest is history. But in terms of the mindset for the Preds players, mentally, how difficult is it to be on the verge of tying the series and then Sissons doesn't score on the empty net, they tie, then you lose in overtime? How do you overcome that in 24, 48 hours to be able to be mentally prepared for Game 5?
Yeah, I think that's it's funny because if you get on Twitter and you listen to every Smashville fan that is just rolling over on the team and right. saying they blew it. Well, hey, like we know if anyone's got the advantage, it's Vancouver on the power play. And if you make a 6-on-5, it's basically a power play, and they snap it around good and they capitalize on it. But for that period, they had nothing, mm-hmm. and the Preds were dominating, and so. I think, you know, the Preds did a good job staying out of the box, but 6-on-5 ended up costing them. So, you know, there's so many facets to the game that I feel like you put into, you know, you're looking at power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5, and then goaltending. You know, you need a big save at the right time. And, you know, for whatever reason, I feel like, with going through three goalies, Vancouver has gotten the edge and made a couple big saves when they needed it, and whoever is in net. And I feel like, you know, you're looking for Saros to make a big save. You know, not for lack of him doing it, but he's been known to make big saves, and he didn't do it at the right time, and the Preds kind of fell apart in that 6-on-5. And so that turns the game around. And that I think if you go back and look at game two, I think that was, you know, game one was the 12 seconds, two bang bang goals, and all of a sudden, you know, Vancouver turns it around. It's been turning points in each game, and the Preds have been on the bottom end of that. So they just need to keep going. And I think the mentality is, hey, we're playing the right way. The hockey gods will bless us when it's the right time. And hopefully that happens because if it doesn't, this series is over.
I'm sure as you can imagine, like every Canucks fan has watched over the tying goal like 1,000 times and broken down all of the great plays, like the Hughes play on the wall that takes Nyquist out, the Miller with the slate, the fake shot that takes out Josi and O'Reilly at the same time, and then Besser obviously making the play to score the goal. I'm curious from your perspective as a defenseman, you know, by the end of the play, there's still 6 seconds on the clock, but it seemed like every Predator seemed to think that there was only 1 second remaining on the clock.
Exactly. They went full send, didn't they? And I think that's one of the hardest things is, like, in your mind, like anyone who's been an athlete that's ever been in a pressure situation, it's like understanding time in that moment is the hardest thing to do, right? And understanding when the patience to be like, okay, I have time, even though you only have 3 seconds, to make that extra move, or you rush it. And I think that's the hardest thing to do. And I think the Preds just went full send. And, like, if we can all fall down and block this, then this game will be over. And it wasn't the case. And give Vancouver credit. They stuck with it. And Besser made a great play, had a great game, and ended up being the hero of that game with a game tire at 6 seconds. But yeah, you see O'Reilly and Josi all going full send, and Saros himself going out way up on top of the crease, mm-hmm. thinking if I can just make this one save, the game's over, and that wasn't the case. So, but that's hockey. That's why we want to live in those moments, and you know, like they feel like they last forever, and 2 seconds, it feels like 2 hours sometimes. So, you know, it's one of those things, and you have to deal with it. Hey, the best athletes in the world forget about things and move on. So we'll find out if the Preds are filled with the best athletes that can put that behind them. Guys like, I think you look at, you know, Luke Shen, Ryan McDonough, Ryan O'Reilly, Roman Josi, Forsberg. These guys have been there. They've mm-hmm. been through the wars and the battles. And you know, McDonough's won cups, and he's had to do this. He's had to deal with this. And everyone who's won anything has gone through these situations. So we'll see how they respond.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for game five. I think it's going to be, I mean, the Canucks, you could also make the argument, haven't played their best yet. And if both teams bring their best, we could have a hell of a game tomorrow evening. Yeah. But you mentioned UC Saros a bit earlier as well. I mean, the Canucks are on three netminders who all won a game each so far. What are you seeing or not seeing in his game currently?
I think he's been great. It's just the bottom line is you need to make a big save at the end. And that's goes with the defenseman, that goes with the team. Like, you need clutch plays at clutch times. You know, like Colton Sissons, God bless him, my heart breaks for him because he has that shot that goes off the post and the empty net. Like, the game's over, right, at that point. If it's an inch inside, you know, you can break down what he did or what he didn't do, but it's just a tough break, and that's hockey. And I think that sometimes people get caught up in the results rather than the, you know, hey, you're all going through this and you're trying to figure it out. And, you know, I think when you talk about Juice, you know, he's made some big saves. He's been awesome. But he's, you know, he's got to be awesomer. You know, like that's the whole thing. If you want to win in the playoffs, you got to take it to the next level. So I think all these guys are looking for not just to play well, but to play well and play clutch in clutch times.
Yeah, and you know, for as few shots on goal as the Canucks have had, they have generated some pretty good looks. Like all the goals they scored yesterday, you know, tough to put them on Saros at all. And you know, that's maybe the one part of this series that I'm curious to get your take on, Hal, is for as much as Nashville maybe dominated territorially in games 3 and 4, they won the shot clock, they suppressed Vancouver's opportunities at the other end. Do you feel like they've generated enough big chances with the amount of possession that they've had?
Yeah, I think it's been hard to get to the middle. And, you know, you look at, you know, guys like Tyler Myers, you know, like you think you're in a good spot to get a scoring chance, and then all of a sudden the stick comes out of nowhere. You know, I made a living off of that. Like, guys underestimated that length and that reach. And, you know, I think the Preds have said, you know, we have to get to the interior, and Andrew Burnett has beat that in their heads, like, get to the interior. Well, you're trying to get to the interior, but it has to be a little bit quicker because they do have guys that, like, you know, Zadorov is going to get a stick on that, and all of a sudden it turns into nothing. And so sometimes you got to think quicker, and in the playoffs, that's the challenge, right? Everything happens quicker, and you don't realize it until you're in there, and you got some young guys like a Luke Evangelista that's just trying to figure his way out in the NHL playoff atmosphere. And, you know, he gets a big goal, and like, can he build off of that? It's like, everyone's got their own story, but I think when it all comes down to it, it's like, who's going to make that quick play at the right time? And I feel like the Preds are looking for that. And, you know, Vancouver hasn't had that many shots, but when they get a shot, it's that JT Miller to Brock Besser backdoor shot. And it's okay, good luck, Juice, trying to stop that one. That's just a good play. And you got to tip your hat and move on. Players are going to make plays and you move on. But I feel like Vancouver has made more of those.
Well, and I think, you know, in many ways, you would be happy if you're Nashville, because the Canucks have had the fewest shots on goal through four games in a playoff series in recent history. So it tells you that they've been able to suppress a lot of the Canucks shots, but they can still generate some quality scoring chances. But I'd say, I mean, is it fair to say that Nashville's probably won most of the battles along the boards and on the forecheck, and the Canucks are kind of winning the battle in the middle of the ice, and that's kind of what makes it so tight?
Yeah, I feel like they have. I feel like the neutral zone has been owned by the Preds.
Yeah.
And that's their strength. You know, Brunette, his style is to move the puck up the boards and go quick and move it up and try to generate from the D zone. And, you know, he's gotten that. I feel like that's been won by the Preds, but it hasn't turned into more scoring chances. I think it did in game four. I think that was the best game for the Preds off the rush to get chances. And, you know, there's been some unfortunate, like the Roenick wobble on the 4-on-4 when Roman Josi's blowing down the wing. You know, those things happen in the playoffs, and that created that goal from Forsberg. But in general, I think the Preds have won that neutral zone battle. It's just they haven't been able to extend plays in the offensive zone because I feel like Vancouver's defended really well. Like, Tocchet's got a good system. It's hard to get into the interior, and he keeps everything to the outside, and they squeeze out. and they push and they create turnovers. So I think that's going to be the challenge. Can the Preds do it on the road where they play with that speed game? Well, I feel like the Preds have gotten better and better as the series has gone on. Can they do that on the road in this building? Can they extend plays and push up the ice the way they did in game four and extend that and get scoring chances that matter? And I think that's going to be the tale of the game.
But before we let you go, we like to do this with a lot of the players that maybe had a fight or a tussle with Rick Tocchet in the past. What was it like fighting the former Canucks coach? He really tried to figure out the size disadvantage he had. It seemed from what I can see on YouTube.
You got it on YouTube right now.
He just kind of jumps
my
at you.
Most shining moment. Well, you know it was one of the scarier moments in my life was when I went to grab him and grab him by his collar. I got the back of his jersey instead, you know, like he ducked under me. And then I'm like looking at this hammerhead right in my face. And he started throwing all kinds of punches. They're coming from everywhere. And I was just, I was in like defense mode at that point. It was a scary moment when his face was right up in mine. And I'm like, okay, my reach is no longer valid. The funny story about that is, you know, I'm a young kid and just trying to figure out what I'm doing. I'm not necessarily a fighter, but I was fighting. And he came up to me after the fight and he's like, hey, you know, he's showing me his hand and he's got blood all over it and everything. He's like, did I get your teeth? And I'm like, what? And he's like, I need to know if I got your, did I get your teeth? Like, I think he was asking me if he needed tetanus or the mind game that he played with me was kind of rattled me for about a week after that. I think in the end he was just trying to show me his hands and show me how badly he smoked me. But he is tough. He is tough. And I lost that battle right as soon as I went for my grab and missed.
It's a pretty wild story. I appreciate that, Hal. I mean,
And you know what? The best thing is, like, I'm so excited to tell that story because I got to fight Rick Tuck. there's not too many people in the world that can say that they got to fight Tocchet, and so I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, it's a wild one.
Even though I'll take the L.
Have you had a chance to like get to know him a little bit since then?
No, not really. No, I stay clear of him. I don't want to get on
that
anymore.
Oh, that's great.
I saw him walking down the hallway, and I walked away. I was looking for quarters.
Oh, Hal, it's a great story. Great catching up, and we'll see you down at the rink tomorrow. Thanks for this.
Yeah, I'm excited. It'll be fun tomorrow. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for your time, Hal.
There is Hal Gill joining us here on Canuck Central. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, and just a hilarious story about Hal Gill fighting Rick Tocchet back in the day. And honestly, like, if you haven't seen the fight, please go and watch it on YouTube, because especially after hearing Hal Gill's analysis of that bout, or him remembering that fight, it makes the watching of the Rick Tocchet versus Hal Gill fight that much better.
It's like watching Tocchet. He's trying to size him up. It's like he's trying to fight a giraffe almost. Like, how do I attack this guy? You know, have you seen those nature documentaries?
Which ones?
Like, for instance, when
March of the Penguins?
When certain animals get desperate, like lions or whatever, and okay, they go after like big game, like a giraffe, and they like jump and leap up and like grab him by the throat or whatever, hang on to dear life as they're trying to take down this monstrous animal. That's what I was thinking about.
What you'll see in the video is Rick Tocchet trying to take a bite out of the elephant, as he talked about
quite literally
in his opening news conference. But yeah, Hal Gill had a bit of a size advantage, and you know, you hear his assessment of the series there, and he thinks it, you know, it'd probably be fair if it was 2-2 coming back to Vancouver the way that the games have played out. But for as much as the Predators have had possession, that they've had and won the battle through the neutral zone, they just haven't been able to break down the Canucks. They haven't been able to get the puck into the middle of the ice to get inside, as Rick Tocchet likes to so often say, and he attributed it to the size on defense. which is also what Rick Tocchet spoke about this morning, are pillars. And he mentioned Soucy. He mentioned Zadorov. He mentioned Myers. He mentioned how good Cole has been again for like the 700th time in the last 3 days.
Well, and one thing that doesn't get enough credit, and you know, Edge and Port Moody's texting, and I went back and forth a little bit about Pettersson. It's like your issue with Pettersson, you guys, is he's a net. He's a liability out there. And you guys aren't saying he's a liability. He's worse than what you guys make him out to be. My point is he's not as bad as you guys make him out to be, because there are positives that he does that go completely unnoticed and don't go acknowledged, but if you look at it from an NHL viewpoint, they would view it as being very positive. And what you just mentioned, the pillars are, yes, they're defensemen, right? Like, they've been done such a great job boxing out, taking sticks away, you know, being physical in front of the net, not allowing Preds players to get inside. But one thing their centers have done a tremendous job of in this series is protect the rail.
Yeah,
Pettersson and Miller and Lindholm and even Teddy Bluger, of course, have done a fantastic job in the middle of the ice. And if you go back and watch games in terms of their center coverage, the way they've come back, the way they've taken away space, the way they've had their sticks in the right angles, the way they don't allow players to get inside on them, that's been a big part of that game too. How often did the coach bemoan their play on the rail when he talks about we need rail guys? And that's the, imagine a horizontal line across the hash marks and the faceoff circle and the offensive zone. That's the rail. That's where they want their first forward back, or they want their center to really be occupying and defending. And those guys have done a tremendous job defending that rail this entire series.
They've stopped that pass coming up to the high slot so often. You know, they've just done an incredible job. And even look at the way that the PK has performed. And I think Nashville is like 1-for-24 now in the entire season series, even the regular season against Vancouver. They scored early in the series, have not scored since. And, you know, that's a real testament to how Vancouver has shored up those spots. And again, some of those pillars on defense working to get around a Tyler Myers and around a Carson Soucy when he's got such a good stick almost at all times. And with how physical Zadorov is playing, like, nobody wants to play against Nikita Zadorov right now with how physical he's been.
No, and I thought Zadorov had a pretty rough night last night. I think he's been tremendous in the series. Last night, he got himself into trouble a few times trying to skate the puck out, trying to overhandle the puck. But then he makes a tremendous job in front of the net on the game tying
goal.
What
a call by Tocchet to
put him net front?
To put him net front there.
What a shout, man. What a shout. And I mean, Tocchet, I thought coaching wise,
Big Z, get out there.
I know there's been, he's probably coughed at, he said, you know how like there's been a lot of talk about adjustments too, but, and some people are criticizing Tocchet. There's somebody who's texting in a lot saying they have to change the lines. I don't know why he doesn't have Bluger with Lindholm and Garland. I don't understand why Hoglander's not with JT and Besser. This person keeps texting in about how they want to change the lines. But to give him credit for the adjustments and for situational decision-making, last night, tremendous job on also pulling the goalie before the Canucks got into the offensive zone. So have the extra attacker out, which allows you to have another guy to help you get into the zone and get set up. It worked out for both goals, making that play. And then the shout to have Zadorov out there was massive. Because, I mean, he gets in the way of McDonough. McDonough can't get around him. So when Besser gets his second opportunity or third opportunity, McDonough has a beat to get across. And maybe he blocks a shot if he comes across. Can't get through Zadorov.
Yeah. You know what's funny about the, like, you mentioned, you know, getting the goalie out while you're preparing the breakout from your own end. And I saw people praising that yesterday on Twitter, and I couldn't help but think of when JT Miller slammed the back of the net and was yelling at Colin Delia to get off the ice.
Yeah, because Grandpa Boudreau needed a nap.
And Delia's like waiting on the coach, and Miller's just like, go! What are you waiting for? And now everybody's praising the Canucks and this style because not enough coaches do it.
So you're saying JT
was
Miller
right the whole time.
Ahead of the curve? He's ahead of the curve?
Well, it makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, you have, we've got an extra player to get in on the retrieval. Like, okay, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Why wait till we're out of our own zone when they're not even forechecking anyways?
So, and I thought what they did a really good job of was put a guy right in the middle too, at the blue line. So, especially with how Nashville's trying to defend, you know, they're covering the walls, they drop back a little bit in their own zone, and they're trying to really pressure the puck carriers. And on the entry, you saw them just make that straight pass up until the guy on the blue line. He either chips it in or moved it to one of the wingers. They got possession. So, I mean, the way they drew up their entries with the extra man, the Canucks didn't do a lot of I almost said a bad word. The Canucks didn't do a lot of stuff well last night. It was like a lot of stuff that they did really, really poorly. But they executed the final 3 minutes of that game to an absolute T. And especially when you rewatch it, it's like, yeah. Oh, they got that right. Oh, they got that right. Like everything went right for them.
Everything on the tying goal just went right. Yeah. You know, they could have let the Sissons near miss like rattle them for a second. Nope. They just went and absolutely executed everything to perfection. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by Threadco Print Shop. Threadco Print Shop, helping businesses and organizations tell their story through custom embroidery and screen-printed apparel. Trust your brand with the Threadco team. ThreadcoPrint.com. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Don Taylor joins us next on Canuck Central. Back in on Canuck Central, it's hour number two here in the Kintec studio, and we continue to look back on the big Game 4 win, the improbable Game 4 win, and also look ahead to what should be a pretty fun night at Rogers Arena tomorrow. Game 5, Canucks with a chance to eliminate the Nashville Predators from the Stanley Cup playoffs as they have the 3-1 series lead. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Don Taylor. He is a presentation of Bessant Motors, and he joins us every Monday here on Canuck Central. Donnie and Dolly, 10 to noon on Check TV, and of course every Monday here on Canucks Central. Thanks for this, Donnie. That was, I would say, one of the most remarkable comebacks I've ever seen in the National Hockey League, never mind Canucks history.
It just came out of nowhere. Just the script with Besser being the one that gets the hat trick and with Besser getting three goals and just all that he's been through and how he's proving that he's a pretty darn good playoff performer. There's that. And then Lindholm, you know, sets up one of Besser's goals, the second goal, and then scores the winner. And that story, there was just so much there yesterday. And just how, look, you know, I think for most of us, this is going to be kind of a weak comparison, but a surprise, and this is for Canucks fans, not Predators fans, but a surprise, really positive, entertaining ending to any movie you go see, something you did not see coming, makes the movie even better. And that was just so entertaining yesterday. Nobody could predict that. And that's why we love sports. You couldn't write that. If you did, you know, a producer would throw the script out the window. It could never happen. It's just so entertaining and such a great, great, great day for Vancouver Canucks fans and the Canucks themselves.
I mean, these are the games that Canucks just don't win in the playoffs, Donnie. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, and if you go back through every single game the Canucks have played in the playoffs, I'm sure we can find a couple of instances, but not games where you're down two goals, you look listless, you look like you have no business being in the game, and then you find a way to score two and also get the winner in overtime. Like, yeah, sure, sometimes maybe you tie the game late and lose in overtime, but those are games like Canucks in their history just don't seem to ever win. And I think that's part of like the shock we all kind of went through is like, following this team ever since I can remember, I just don't remember them winning games like this very often.
No, you're right, Sad. I can't. I mean, we could dig deep and find something,
yeah.
And you know, and I'm sure one of your great listeners could come up with something. But we had Craig Berube on the show, and I'm sure you guys are aware that Craig Berube and Rick Tocchet are buddies from their Flyers days, and they talk a lot. And one thing he said that he loves about the way Tocchet coaches, and you know what Tocchet and him talk about a lot, is that it's okay to be playing lousy, or not, I shouldn't say lousy, but you know, things aren't working well for you in a game, and that's okay, that you could still win that game, and you have to be, and here's the word, the word of the Canucks season, and certainly in the playoffs, they're wearing t-shirts, you have to be resilient. And that's what they are. You're not at your best, but you're still in it. It's 3-1 late. You could still win that game. And there's a real belief amongst this team that these players, that can happen game in, game out. I think the strangest thing about this series, I mean, okay, the goaltending situation with the Canucks, that talk about unpredictable. That's unbelievable. And the fact three goalies in one game, it just it's happened three other times in the National Hockey League. But you could argue, I'm not saying you'd be right, but you could argue the Canucks' best game might have been the game they lost. Game two, 84 shot attempts. Game one, they're down 3-1 at home in the third period. We mentioned game two just now. Game three, they have 12 shots.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, they don't look their best. They're down 3-1 late. Looks like it's going to be tied at two, and they end up winning. It's been really strange, unpredictable, a lot of fun, really entertaining.
Yeah, it's been wild following it along, and I know that you know the narrative that they stole it yesterday is kind of fair with the way that they were going in the third period. It just seemed like they had no push whatsoever until they pulled the goalie. But the one thing that's been super consistent through all four games here, Donnie, is how well they've defended as a team, and they've carried that over from the regular season. Even though they lose their star netminder Thatcher Demko, you know, they've protected the house around Casey DeSmith and Artur Shilov's really well. For as much puck possession and even shots that Nashville has had over these last two games, I don't know if they've had a ton more big time chances than Vancouver has, despite Vancouver's lack of possession.
Yeah. You know, of course, one of the chances was an empty net that they hit a post on.
Yeah.
So there was that. And I think the I don't know if the right word is promising, but the interesting aspect of the Canucks defending so well is that some of the Canucks doing the best defending aren't, well, one of the people not doing the best defending is Quinn Hughes. Yeah. I mean, and when I say that, I don't mean as a knock. He's been wonderful and he's taking all sorts of punishment. And boy, did he come through on that tying goal yesterday. But you look at the ice time, and it's Zadorov, and it's Cole. JT Miller is getting mentioned by Rick Tocchet. It's the old school, and Tocchet loves these types of players, the old school tough guys that just they just thrive on that battle. And when you know, things getting tough and physical, and you know they're the guys doing a lot of the defending and doing it really effectively and, you know, getting a lot of ice time. And, you know, Hughes isn't necessarily leading them in ice time every single game out. And maybe that's because of what's happening with the punishment. But it's just really interesting who's doing the defending and just everything just seems to be so effective right now. I mean, if they lost that game 3-1 with Shilov's in goal, I don't think anybody, you know, it's not great to fault to allow them to tie it, the mm-hmm. series at two, but I don't think anybody would have been, oh, they were just horrible defensively. And now they end up winning and they're one game away from advancing. But it's just been so interesting, so many aspects. So, and like I say, we haven't even brought up that empty net, which was just absolutely crazy. You know, sandwiched in between the Besser's second goal and his third goal. I mean, my gosh, talk about a game of inches.
Yeah, I mean, just absolutely bonkers. I mean, yeah. We all looked at it and thought, hey, puck's going in here, game's over, you know, getting ready to, you know, put this one to bed. And the reaction on the Preds bench, they were bewildered the puck didn't go in either. I mean, again, like these things just don't happen in Canucks games, in the playoffs especially. But, you know, it's been one of those series that Besser has now four goals. You can say he's been a star in this series, of course. I mean, you have a hat trick and almost win a game by yourself when you have a hat trick, then you're going to get a lot of credit, of course. But JT's been consistent game to game, right? Been absolutely terrific every single game so far. But I think Quinn Hughes, you know, you mentioned the punishment. He's had a bit of an up and down series. I'm sure he's dealing with some injury, of course. We know he's getting targeted and those things are hindering his play. But then he steps up and makes two incredible plays late in that game to help the team win. And it's all capped off by dusting Gustav Nyquist at the blue line. Doesn't get a point for it, but if he doesn't make that play, you don't tie the game up. So even though Quinn wasn't at his best, he came up when it mattered most, and that's the kind of the stuff of legends too when it comes to your leaders, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if there was a third assist handed out, it would have gone to Quinn Hughes in that particular situation, breaking Nyquist's ankles and feeding the puck back to Pettersson so coolly and calmly on his backhand. It really was special. And he's just such a good player, and you know he's not backing down. You can see it; he's not backing down from the punishment he's taking. You just wonder what it's going to mean if they do advance, how far can he go given the punishment he's taking? He's not the biggest guy in the world, and he's hard to catch, but he's been caught a couple of times by the Preds. And Rick Tocchet made the point, they're sending three guys on the puck carrier at times. And start to, and you know, a lot of, you know, so much of the time with the Canucks, the puck carrier is Quinn Hughes, and he's not the biggest guy in the world, and he's taking the punishment, and they're hitting him hard, but he's coming through with moments like that, and he just, you know, proving what a special player he is. Hey, back to Colton Sissons for a second. I don't know about you guys, but everybody knows he's from here, from North Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving Nashville fans enough credit, but I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, man, I hope that, you know, nobody just found out, like they looked at his bio after he missed that shot and found out he's from Vancouver. You know, like I'm thinking, man, Colton might be in trouble with the people of Tennessee. So I'm sure he's not, but that did go through my mind.
Yeah. Wonder if there will be any Bill Buckner level of distaste for Colton Sissons after that, but you know, it's a tough spot. That's a tough one that he's going to have to get over here. But he has had a pretty good series otherwise.
He's been around for a while.
Yeah. So on Quinn Hughes, you know, the question often comes up, well, there's got to be more of a response to the way that Nashville is playing against Quinn. And I think the way Tocchet has answered some of these questions is like, yeah, it's just like it's playoff hockey, right? They're going to try and take out your star. They're going to try and hit him as hard as they can every opportunity that they get. But the Canucks, like, this is tied into the way that they've been playing and how they have been mostly unable to connect play through the neutral zone and spend significant amounts of time in the offensive zone in this series, Donnie. Like, that's the way they protect Quinn Hughes is play more in the offensive end and not having to retrieve the puck in your own end and letting those forecheckers just crush your star defenseman every time out.
Yeah, and, you know, the old school people we have, and I love them, heck, I'm one of them, but they say what you were talking about at the beginning there. Somebody's got to step up and drop their gloves and protect Quinn, and that's fine, and I agree with that to a point. But at what point during this series was that possible? Because the games have been close. And, you know, it's you know, when somebody gets up 6-1 or 7-1, maybe that's when something like that happens. But the games have been too close, and you can't go in the box. You can't get an instigator penalty. You can't go in the box by yourself. The games are just way too close. So, hey, look, it's playoff hockey, and part of it is the star players, whoever you are, fourth-line players, you have to take punishment at times and realize that you have to show restraint. Taking a penalty and defending somebody and dropping the gloves is not the best thing to do in a tight, tight game. So he's so good. He's got to rely on his elusiveness. And, you know, if somebody needs to defend him somewhere down the line when the situation is right, maybe that'll happen. But I understand why it hasn't happened to this point. But you're bang on. Get in the Predators' zone. Cause trouble for them with the puck. And don't let, you know, and that way Quinn Hughes isn't retrieving the puck and is in behind the net and take, you're getting sandwiched like he did yesterday.
As far as Elias Pettersson goes, I know you and Rick spoke on the show today, Donnie and Dolly, yeah, about Pettersson's situation and that he could be suffering through some sort of injury. What do you make of his play and what's actually going on that is leading to his play not being as good as it needs to be right now?
Yeah, I just got to believe he's hurt. Now, I talked to somebody who's a friend of his on a regular basis, and he says there's nothing. He doesn't mention anything. The pomp in his game is just not there at all. The cheekiness, you know, that shot. I mean, and then we all know the history with the wrist. You know, we know there's a problem there. I haven't seen him with the glove off, you know, whether or not it's taped up during a game or not. Like, there's got to be something going on. And I would think that Rutherford, Alvin are praying. I mean, as strange as this sounds, they're praying there's something going on because, health-wise, I mean, because that contract kicks in next year. 8 years, 11.6 per. It's Mitch Marner-like, the situation. Not quite that bad. He's not throwing his gloves around at his teammates or in the vicinity. But there's just got to be something. I just think there's got to be something. I know people accuse him of falling down a lot, but there was one play in the third period. I don't know if you guys remember, but he had the puck. No one around him. Well, there's some of the Predators were fairly close. over the blue line. He just fell. He was this, there was just no particular reason why. And he just, I got to think there's something wrong with him health wise, and we're going to find out about it after this run is over, no matter how it is.
Yeah. And, you know, the Canucks are getting by without him playing at his best right now. But, you know, could that last beyond this series? Should they be able to close out Nashville here? You know, that's you're going to need a lot more offensively against what we think will be the Edmonton Oilers in a potential round two scenario.
Yeah, we'll see. And keep in mind, guys, too, that I'm sure everyone's aware of this, but, you know, a lot of people criticize the Canucks not getting enough shots. What the heck's going on? But they're winning games. Oilers had 13 shots last night.
Yeah.
And they ended up winning 1-0. Skinner gets his first ever NHL shutout. So, That sort of thing, can't happen. But I gotta believe we're gonna find something out about Elias Pettersson health wise, and that's gonna lead to the question: is why did he not rest late in the regular season? So it'll be interesting. You know what's happening right now, guys? That because they're winning, and this is sad for anybody that's an Elias Pettersson fan, is that less and less he's becoming part of the conversation. Like, it's almost like people are accepting that he's just not living up to expectations. And as they win, we don't talk about it. And it's people are almost kind of indifferent to it. They're accepting that he's not all that good right now. And again, I got to believe there's something wrong with him.
Yeah. As soon as that changes, though, if they start to lose some games, the narratives and the knives will be out for Elias Pettersson pretty quick, as we've seen in the past. I know this, like, hey, every NHL market loves a good goalie controversy, and this one is unlike those, is a lot like that. But it seems as though everybody's trying to make a goalie controversy out of Casey DeSmith and Artur Shilov's already, and Rick Tocchet has been noncommittal. He was noncommittal again today when asked about it on a couple of occasions during his morning availability. But for me, Don, like, there's no controversy here. I get it. Shilov's played well yesterday, but if DeSmith is ready to go, and I have no reason to believe he wouldn't be. I mean, he was the e-bug yesterday. You get DeSmith back in there as the veteran goalie.
And, you know, we have John Garrett on our show, and he agrees with you. He says, of course, if there's ever a veteran goalie, it's John. But, you know, he totally agrees with you. You don't lose your job with an injury or illness, whatever the case may be. But, guys, I don't know. When I hear talk about Shilov, we had a poll today. Who should start in goal for the Canucks game 5?
Oh, so you're the problem. That's it. Okay.
Yeah,
now I get
it. Well, no, Shilov's won it. So it's not just me who thinks this way or who is kind of thinking that way. I think it was like 60-40 in favor of Shilov's. Now, that might be recency bias, right? And, you know, I have a young kid. He's the greatest thing. And so I'm voting for him. But when I hear Tocchet talk, there's just something about the way he talks about Shilov's that makes me think that ever so slightly, he thinks this kid can do something special. And maybe it has to do with Latvia and the World Championships, his personality, nothing against Casey DeSmith, but just something makes me think there's something there, and I wouldn't be surprised with Shilov's. That's just gut on my part, but just hearing him talk, I think, man, he really likes this kid. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just remarkable, too. It's one of those things, like, you look at this team now and things that are going on now. It's we're just seeing stuff that we haven't seen before, like I just kind of mentioned before, too. And goalies, like, you know, we saw it happen in 2004. They had three goalies that year, but it was a different feeling around the club, too. And ultimately, you still have to close a series out, right? So for all this talk about what happened here in Game 4, for the opportunity they have now, close this thing out tomorrow, right? Like, that would be the ultimate sign of this team being different, is that if they take care of business and take care of or take advantage of this great opportunity they have now to get a few days rest ahead of round two.
Yeah, the Canuck thing to do would be, of course, to lose.
Yeah,
and there's a game 7 on Sunday.
Yeah,
and then Lord knows what happens. And we brought up the ugly subject for Canuck fans of 2003. You know, fairly heavily favored in the early series against the Minnesota Wild up 3-1, and they end up losing on home ice game 7 when they had a 2-0 lead in that game. We really heard it from people today for bringing that up and like jinxing the Canucks. But you know what? Everything that's going on right now it just seems to be not very, oh my God, I hate using this word, but not very Canucky. But you know, So we haven't really seen that yet. So why wouldn't this group that hasn't looked that way so far, why wouldn't they close it out tomorrow in game five?
Should be a fun one at Rogers Arena. Hey, Donnie, always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
So much fun. Always fun, guys. Thanks so much.
There is Don Taylor on Sports at 650, brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the players go. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here on Canucks Central, and Canucks playoff coverage on Sports at 650 is brought to you by All Seasons Roofing. Sun, rain, wind, or snow, All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. For your free quote, visit allseasonsroofing.ca. One game on the go in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Let's get to a goal horn. The Florida Panthers trying to eliminate the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they've got the first goal of the game. The goal horn is brought to you by Rewind Beer Co. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. It is Carter Verhaeghe scoring the opener. It gives the Panthers a 1-0 lead here in the second period. The Lightning, who are trying to stave off elimination, did have a goal in the first period, but it was challenged by Florida for goalie interference, and it was taken off the board. So challenges still are accepted and completed in the Stanley Cup playoffs, much to Rick Tocchet's dismay.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tocchet said it was a right call last night on the Forsberg kick.
Yes.
And for those, I mean, there was a lot of people being very mad that Tocchet didn't challenge, and of course he cannot challenge.
He can't challenge that one, but he could have challenged the 2-1 goal in Game 3. Yeah. Could have challenged the Demko, like the game one goal where the glove was tapped. I know not everybody agrees with that one.
I don't disagree, but at the same time, like, it worked out in both times.
Yes, it did.
So it's like, you know.
Worked out in the end.
He worked out. All that matters is you got it right in the end, and hey, the Canucks got it right by winning the game, right? So
how, last night's narrative, how much do you think the kicked in goal becomes a discussion if the Canucks don't overturn the result?
If they lose 3-1, I don't think it's that big a one.
Yeah.
If they get one goal and lose 3-2, I think it would be a big talking point.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've watched that play so many times. To me, it's borderline. Like, you see a push, it's borderline. But I'm of the mind, I want to see those plays stand. Like, I'm big against the whole, yeah, like, you know, I'm like, we need to simplify this, and I think there's too much going on already. Like, we should
too
allow
much, it's too much noise.
Yeah, and I think
remove the white noise,
and I think generally this should allow those goals, right? Like, I think that's the way it should be. But the thing that got me was the point of review is to review those close calls, right? To take a closer look at it, and the situation room didn't deem it was worthy to have a closer look at it. And to me, watching it, I'm like, I had a hard time in the first glance. Like, so why wouldn't you send your official to take a glance at it? And that's the way I would view it. Because it's not like VAR, where if they go to the monitor, they are overturning it. It's just telling the official to confirm their overturn. In hockey, the officials still have to make the call on the ice. So why not give them a chance to make that call on the ice? And that was my gripe. But that doesn't mean the goal should not have stood, or that the officials were wrong to let it stand. I was just dismayed that they didn't take a closer look at a call that was very, very close.
Yeah, let them have a second look at it. And, you know, the hard part about it is, like, kicking motion. So, you know, when you try to describe a kicking motion to somebody, There's a lot of ways that you can look at the Forsberg play and say there was a kicking motion there, because he clearly moves his foot in a way that was to kick the puck into the net. Or you could say it was to direct the puck into the net. Which is a kick and which is a direct? You're right. There's a lot of noise there. So they need to simplify the rule somehow. And I think they've just sort of like, okay, this is the rule, and we're just, unless it's an egregious kick, we're just going to say it's a good goal and hope everybody agrees with it. But that one could have been a very, very different conversation. All right. We'll get into some more of your text messages and your questions. Also get into some of the other things happening around the league. It is Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. It is Canuck Central. We'll be right back. It's the final segment of Canuck Central here on Sportsnet 650. In about 24 hours, we'll be at Rogers Arena, welcoming in folks on the concourse. If you missed it, last game out, game two, we were on the concourse as well. All of Satyar's biggest fans were coming around to say hello.
Show fans, man.
Yeah.
Oh, Riccio love, man. Come on.
I really did like how respectful some of our listeners were, though.
They realized we're on air.
Realizing we were on air, and so they took the chance to take a selfie with us while we were discussing whatever it was we were discussing.
Yeah, so we did it on the fly. You know how the Canuck has players, hockey players change on the fly? Like, we did interactions on the fly.
Yes.
It was good. We got lots of, like, thumbs up and, like, you know, fist bumps and shouts and stuff, so we waved at people. It was cool.
We will be there again tomorrow on the concourse, and the promo team will have some giveaways. We'll see how long they last. They went pretty quick.
And there was a lot, man. Yeah. We had, like, what, 400 foam fingers?
They had a lot of foam fingers that disappeared pretty quick. So you got to get to the game early if you're going to get a foam finger.
When I first saw the amount of swag we had, and it was like tons of hats, foam fingers, and a bunch of stuff, I'm like, oh, man, they came prepared. Like, it was all gone, like, before warm-ups even started.
So all those people you saw on TV with one foam finger and one towel, they came by the came by the booth. So we'll be there again tomorrow in the lead up to game five. And it's kind of a big one. Like, it's obviously not a must win sat, but you heard JT Miller put it pretty bluntly. It would save 4.5 hours of flying. So yeah, we'd like to take it in five, because now, I mean, look, we know Quinn Hughes has obviously taken some bumps and bruises at the very least in this series. There's the talk of Pettersson. You got your goalie situation going on. Anytime you're able to get extra rest in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it is a good time to do that.
Yeah, man. Like, and if you have your sights on doing more than just winning a round, you need to take care of business as early as possible.
Yeah.
You know, and you need a few short series along the way. Now, that doesn't mean if you win in five that you will win the next round. I mean, the Canucks swept the the St. Louis Blues back in 2009 and then lost to the Chicago Blackhawks. Or was it 2010? I can't remember which year it was. 2009 or 2010. And then lost to the Blackhawks in round two. So it doesn't mean having a sweep or winning in five games is going to lead to you winning the next round. But all these things matter, right? And the Canucks haven't played their best game of the series yet.
Yeah.
You hope it comes tomorrow and take care of business, because I do think the Canucks as a team can be a lot better, especially offensively, than what they've shown so far.
Marty the Red with this text: we need Tocchet to flex and start Tolopilo tomorrow. I don't know. The way he sounded today, he was wondering if he should start Zach Sochenko in one of these games.
Yeah.
After the performance he put up with Abbotsford. It's crazy how far the Canucks have had to dig into their goalie depth here.
Well, it's funny because, yeah, they're on their third string goalie in Abbotsford, and the Canucks are on their third string goalie here on the main club.
Yeah. And Artur Shilov's played pretty well. We'll see what happens tomorrow, but I am expecting it to be another Casey DeSmith start for game five.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I know Donnie was saying he thinks the coach really likes Shilov's. I don't know where this one is going to go yet.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where this one's going to go yet.
We'll see what happens tomorrow. We'll get more news as the Canucks have a morning skate just after 10 a.m. Let's quickly do a goal horn. The storm is subsiding, and there is not much lightning to it as the goal horn. That was really bad.
You should have kept going, man. You're on to something.
The goal horn is brought to you by Rewind.
The storm stopped. No more storm. The lightning has gone away.
The goal horn brought to you by Rewind Beer Co. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. Sasha Barkov scoring shorthanded, mind you. To give the Florida Panthers a 2-0 lead on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Of course, the Panthers with a chance to eliminate their Floridian counterparts. Yeah.
That was the most Elias Pettersson you've been so far. You know, have an opportunity, and then you just kind of punt on it at the last second. It's like, maybe this was not for me.
Keep it simple, stupid. Yeah. Like, that's Radio 101, one of my first lessons. After the one where, like, unless you really like doing this, leave now. The second lesson was keep it simple, stupid.
Yes.
Like,
Kiss.
K-I-S-S.
Yes.
Seems like they did it the same way both in the East and West Coast. All right. Panthers up 2-0 later on tonight, and the evening viewing for me, at least on the appointment viewing, is the Dallas Stars trying to level up their series with the Vegas Golden Knights. But before we get to more of that, another goal horn. Lightning struck. Lightning is struck. That storm came out of nowhere. The goal horn is brought to you by Rewind Beer Co. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. After giving up the shorthanded goal, Victor Hedman responds with a big-time clapper from the point, beating Sergei Bobrovsky on his glove side, and it's now 2-1. Panthers trying to close out this series, but Tampa not done yet.
That was an absolute blast.
Yeah.
Top cheese.
It's funny listening to some of the rhetoric from the teams that are on the brink of elimination. You know, Tampa, that John Cooper quote after they went down 3-0, like, if you don't think we can come back and win this series, then you can go home.
Yeah.
Love that from the coach. And then I was listening to Sheldon Keefe today, and he was asked by the Auston Matthews injury, and he's just like, but yeah, we can, you know, guys have been out before, and we can win without him, you know. It's like, man, you do not sound like the most confidence-inspiring head coach right now.
And that's been my biggest thing with Sheldon Keefe. It's like his emotional control doesn't seem great. You know what I mean? And I know I brought this up before, but it was 2 years ago. You know, it was in the elimination game. He's in between periods. He's like putting a seed of doubt into his guys' heads. It's like, if you guys don't play better, you're not going to win this series. Like,
yeah.
You guys think you're good. You're not that good unless you work hard or whatever. And it's like, and then they went out and were even worse in the next period. And Kelly Rudy's like, maybe try to build your guys up.
Yes.
And when they need confidence instead of going the other way. Like, and then you contrast that with Rick Tocchet, for instance.
Oh, man.
And then Tocchet today, I thought he told a great story about they're going on their third string goalie, like Artur Shilovs, and he was talking about Patrick Alvin and his demeanor, because Alvin, he says, is always next guy up mentality. And he's like, he went over to Patrick to say, hey, the news on DeSmith. He's like, yeah, DeSmith's hurt. We got to go with Shilovs next game. He's like, okay, sounds good. Where are we going for dinner? Like, his reaction was like, all right, great. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's fine. We're going to be fine.
Yeah.
What are we doing for dinner? You know what I mean? And then you see Sheldon Keefe, how he answers these things. It seems like, you know, the weight of the world is on his shoulders.
Yes.
And I understand Toronto's different. It's a different animal. But I think from the outside looking in, and we're not there, right? So it's easy for me to say, obviously. But it seems like a guy who doesn't have good emotional control of his room. And it seems like the swings and everything, he's as guilty as anybody for going up and down with these swings. And when that's your leader, I don't think that instills the confidence you need in pressure situations.
Man, your outward demeanor is, I think it projects out onto the team.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
Especially with your leaders, like your coach,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's supposed to be the guy, and that's something Tocchet talks about. He's like, yeah, you know, sometimes I'm frustrated by the calls, but I don't like losing it and losing my composure behind the bench, because then the guy's looking behind and they're like, oh, he's losing it. You know, how are we going to maintain our composure? And I think he wants to instill that we're under control, we're fine, don't worry about it, like, we're going to overcome these things. And sometimes that means, like, biting your tongue. That's controlling your emotions. And I don't see that from Sheldon Keefe.
You know, there was easily maybe an opportunity to take a timeout yesterday and be like, let's go, fellas. Like, what are we doing here? You're kind of sleepwalking here through this third period. And, you know, there was none of that. It was always just, it's always just kind of the same thing with the Canucks. They kind of, they practice what they preach, and that is staying even keeled and understanding that, you know, the moments will come to them if they keep playing their game.
Well, and it's also, it shows the trust.
Because
if a team shows you, and he mentioned yesterday, resiliency being the word, resilience, the word that players themselves want to use to describe their season and what they are. And if you're a resilient team, that means you don't get too bothered by bad moments, that you have trust that they're going to figure it out and overcome, right? And that's what he's imparting by behaving this way. It's like, hey, you guys have shown I can trust you. You guys show you can recover. I don't need to tell you all the time. So I'll let you guys handle it and figure it out. And generally speaking, that's been a recipe for success for this team.
So a couple of things here before we send you off for the night to do whatever it is you are going to do on this beautiful Monday evening in Vancouver. An obituary on the 2024 Washington Capitals, the only team to get swept away in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I watched a little bit of the final game. And not that I want to be the guy that piles on 38-year-old Alex Ovechkin, But I didn't see any of the guy that found a way to end up at 30 goals on the season. And turns out it feels like Spencer Carberry felt the same way. You know, he only played, I think, 15 minutes in an elimination game. Alex Ovechkin, like, what are we talking about here? It when I couldn't really disagree with the coach because Ovi was a bit of a ghost. And there was a third period power play that they had, and Ovi would just had like no interest in fighting for any puck. It was just it was an interesting watch with Alex Ovechkin.
Listen, Ovi used every ounce of energy he had left to get to 30 goals.
Yeah.
At the end of the season.
I think that's fair.
Like honestly, I think
and
like
just to really like hate on my take that he wasn't going to beat the record.
Somebody played it for him, I'm convinced. but yeah, and as soon as you said that, he was at 18 goals, right? He got to 20, yeah. Got to 30. But yeah, I think a lot of it is that. And watching this bad team, man. Like, yeah. I know I picked them to make the playoffs, but like, come on.
Ovi needs guys that, like, he can't drive, right? And, you know, he played most of his career with either Kuznetsov or Nick Backstrom, right? Yeah. Like, those guys, two incredible centermen
for
in their
sure.
primes.
And, like, there's no pressure. Like, the Capitals were probably the team that was the most lucky this year. If you look at the totality of, they lost a lot of bad games, right? And then they would have some close wins. But on the whole, they probably should have lost more games than they did, but they found a way to win enough to make the playoffs in a pretty weak showing in the Eastern Conference at the bottom of the standings for the playoff spot. And that's how they got in. It wasn't convincing, right? And, you know, like, did anybody expect this series to go beyond like five games even? Like, I think somebody,
really.
if anybody picked six games, to me, that would have been, I was like, yeah, six seems like a bit of a stretch, right?
Ovi has a ring and only cares about his 895th goal. I don't know if that's entirely true. I mean, look, the guy is 38 years old, you know, and I think there's some things he's going to have to do to get himself better prepared in his elder years here in these final few years as he goes to chase down the record. But I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm not sure I expect to see Alex Ovechkin play another playoff game.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I do think Washington is going to be somewhat aggressive in doing what they can to improve the roster. Now, how much they can improve it, we'll see. But, I mean, who's convincing in the East, though? I mean, it all depends what happens this offseason.
Yeah.
Are the Flyers that close? Are they going to turn the corner next year? Or are they going to pull a Buffalo Sabres, where they look close and then take another step back next season?
The Metro is very interesting in that... you've got New York. Obviously, the Rangers don't seem like they're going away anytime soon. Hurricanes don't seem like they're going away anytime soon. They got a pretty good young team still. Devils probably bounce back at some point. They've got too much talent. But after that, Islanders have a lot of questions moving forward. Capitals have a lot of questions moving forward. Penguins have a lot of questions moving forward. So, and Columbus doesn't like that. Columbus and Philadelphia. I'm not sure. You know, you can expect them to be good next year either. So, yeah, it's. There's a few teams there that make it an interesting conversation, but Washington does feel like quite a ways away. So I'm not sure we get to see Alex Ovechkin play in another playoff game. It's at best, I think Washington is a bubble team again next year and fighting for a wild card spot. But even that might be difficult for them. Rangers were your preseason pick to be a Stanley Cup finalist. I think I'm correct on that.
Make it to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Yes.
To be a Stanley Cup finalist.
But I also punted on that take like a month left in the season when they were playing like trash. And I'm like, yeah, they're probably not going to make it anymore.
They still won the President's Trophy. But
well, the Rangers, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, the Rangers are my cup final. I had them winning the Stanley Cup. Yes.
Yeah.
The Rangers had them winning the Stanley Cup before the season.
And here they are getting the sweep. I guess what's interesting about the Rangers, you know, will be... Obviously, they're likely to play the Carolina Hurricanes. It's going to be a fascinating series. But I wonder about the Rangers and just how much they rely on their power play to win games. And can you always rely on that in the postseason? That'll be a question for the Rangers moving forward going into their series with the Carolina Hurricanes. Another big piece of news today, the Seattle Kraken moving on from Dave Haxtell. After three seasons as their head coach, obviously a disappointing first year. They had a great second year, beat Colorado in the playoffs, get into a second round series. And then this year was, again, disappointing enough to the point that they have moved on from their head coach. And now More than half the league has replaced their coach since Rick Tocchet was hired last January. Almost half the league replaced their coach since last September when Mike Babcock was ousted in Columbus for all of those reasons that he was ousted in Columbus before ever actually coaching a game for the Columbus Blue Jackets. But like 13 coaches in one season? I don't know. That feels like a record. I don't know. I should have asked Sportsnet Stats this before the show, but that feels like a record. That's insane how many coaches have gotten their jobs taken away from them this year.
Yeah, it really has. But and I wonder if how much of it has to do with the coach's bump you see oftentimes and teams look at it and say, hey, when a team makes a change, usually it means good things right away or whatever, and don't hold on to it too long. But I do think we're entering a phase in hockey where it's going to be really difficult for guys to hold their jobs for more than 3 years.
Yeah.
Even teams that have success right away, how do you maintain that? Like right now, Rick Tocchet here, for instance, is getting all the love. Like Torgi texted in, and we were talking about, you know, we're comparing and contrasting Keefe and Tocchet's demeanor. He said, that's because Rick Tocchet is a you-know-what man. How do you not love this guy? Absolutely. All it takes, though, is a losing streak, some guys underachieving next year, and people wondering if he still has the same touch behind the bench, right? So it's very fleeting for coaches. Guys that look like their solutions 1 year look like the problem next season. I think we're also entering a very dynamic phase now with coaches and how hard it is for them to have the ear of a room for more than a couple of years.
So when I was looking up the longest tenured head coaches in the National Hockey League, the name that absolutely floored me to be near the top of the list. So it's John Cooper, who's been with Tampa since 2013. Then it's Mike Sullivan, Jared Bednar, Rod Brind'Amour, Sheldon Keefe. That's your top five.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth most tenured head coach in the National Hockey League is Martin St. Louis.
Yeah. That's crazy. It's wild. I mean, when Travis Green got let go, he's one of the like most tenured coaches in
Vancouver
league.
For 5 years.
Yeah.
It was one of the most tenured coaches in the league.
Yeah. And I think also the other part of it, too, is the salary cap's been absolutely flat.
Yeah.
And teams are capped out. And it's so hard to move contracts. And, you know, we joked about this over the past couple of years because we looked at, you know, not enough trades happening around the National Hockey League. The Canucks have made their share of trades, right?
Yes.
With this new regime. But it's been hard making deals because every single player that's of any consequence, if they're not an impending free agent, are locked into long-term contracts, it seems. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for you to make moves. Like, how often we heard about teams that want to make trades and then can't make trades, you know? And so I think a lot of our teams are stuck too, where if you need a shakeup, you can't do it a significant one with your roster. You have to do it with your coach.
As this text says, coaches lose their jobs because of crappy team construction by cowardice GMs.
I do agree. There's been some bad GMing, no doubt.
Like I haven't loved the job that Ron Francis did with the Seattle Kraken. Now, he's getting this one coaching change. I don't think Ron Francis will get another kick at the can if it doesn't work with another head coach in Seattle. But, like, think about what he's done with that team. And I know, okay, they've got some stuff bubbling at the surface. You know, Shane Wright and those kinds of things. It's going to take a while for some guys to start coming there. But, like, think about the big contracts this guy's handed out. You know, Grubauer? Terrible decision. You know, spend a lot of money right away when he had the clean slate. Guys like Jaden Schwartz and you know, Jamie Oleksiak got a big contract from them. It was just strange the way that they started out of the gate, and they've kind of built this team of like a lot of good but not great players. And you only have, As a head coach, we're seeing it kind of with Nashville and what Andrew Brunette's doing with them. It's like there's only so much you can do if you don't have star-level talent. And Nashville's got Forsberg. They've got Josi. Beyond that, they struggle to really have much more. And you look at Seattle, and it's kind of the same deal. Like, yeah, you can generate a lot of chances. You can control the possession battle, but ultimately, stars win hockey games, as we see so often across the league.
I mean, you can make that case for the Canucks even last game, right? Like, hey, as much as the Canucks had their struggles, of course, they weren't good enough. They did not deserve to win last night's game on the totality. But we had a great chat with Hal Gill, who covers the Predators, and he mentioned, it's like, yeah, sure, maybe the Preds deserved better, but the Canucks made plays when they needed to make plays. Their star players made plays late in the game when they needed to make plays, and hats off to them, right?
Yeah.
And you can't take that away from the team. You still had to do things right to tie the game up, to get within a goal. And they did do those things. And on those plays, their star players showed more quality. And that's something the Canucks have an edge in this series.
Yeah.
They've been outplayed for large stretches. Like we mentioned, you know, earlier in the show, it probably should be a 2-2 series, right? Like it should be 2-2. And maybe in a different universe, Nashville's up 3-1, depending on what happens, especially with Demko getting hurt. Like, you know what I mean? Like all these possibilities could have been here for where this series is at. But nonetheless, the Canucks star players have produced more. Besser has 4 goals.
Yeah,
JT Miller is just piling up the points.
Yep.
Lindholm has 3 points, scored a game winner in overtime.
Yep.
You know, to your point, star players have to step up in big moments, and the Canucks players did that late last night.
So, yes, Dave Haxtell out in Seattle. We'll see what happens next for the Seattle Kraken. Tomorrow, all about the Canucks trying to eliminate the Seattle, well, not the Seattle Kraken, the Nashville Predators.
Their coach got eliminated today.
Yeah, their coach did get eliminated today. Canucks will do their thing, and we'll be at Rogers Arena for the totality of the program, starting at 4 o'clock, leading you all the way into the 7 o'clock puck drop. If you are going to the game, make sure you find us on the concourse ahead of puck drop. We may have some swag, but it's only while supplies last.
Yes.
So make sure you get there early.
For sure. And quickly, because our guy, Basketball Phil, sent us a tweet from the Kraken Pod. They have a report saying the feedback Ron Francis got was from certain players saying, I don't want to play on this team in the future if Dave Haxtell is going to be the coach again. So apparently Francis didn't want to fire the man. He just extended a year ago, as this tweet says. But that's a report that the players were the ones voicing their displeasure.
Oh, it's always a good sign when your players are the ones that want the head coach out. Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, they are bringing you the Canucks playoff coverage here on Sportsnet 650. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their 6 locations across BC this spring. Visit dleamc.com. You are listening to Canuck Central.